This is Counterculture with Marie Buskey, Wednesdays at 10 a.m. on Reality Check Radio.
Good morning and welcome back to Counterculture here on Reality Check Radio. And it's been a hot month or two or three since I've had the Annie Hart on the show, my lifestyle guru. How are you, Annie?
I'm good.
It's been too long. We did catch up in Reelsies though in August, so that was fun. So that was very good. And we've done death, we've done debt, we've done dating, and it's now time to do diet. But as we were just saying before we got started, it's not really diet. We just wanted to talk about living. I don't know whether you've seen this in recent weeks, but there's certainly been an awareness and awakening in the United States around the quality of what you eat, how you live, as well as the involvement of Big Pharma that many of us have been aware of, but the involvement of big food companies in controlling what you consume, how sedentary people's lives have become, and the Means siblings, Kelly and Casey Means, have been getting a lot of airtime around the work that they've been doing. She's a doctor and he, I think, is a lobbyist, a former lobbyist for some of these groups. They've been on Tucker and Rogan and all the rest. But sometimes that all is out there in the ether, isn't it? You can't touch it. And you think, well, how do we dissect and distill that down to me?
We need to get it practical. And
yeah. How do we do that, Annie?
Well, I think really, well, first of all, just probably people don't know much about why am I telling them these things. Health is my passion and my training, and I can reveal that I've been in health for over 30 years I was a physiotherapist actually, but what I've done a lot is a lot of health coaching. And what I found is everybody starts from a different place. So you've got to find out where people are starting from and walk beside them to get them to where they want to go. And some people want to go very fast and other people want to go very slow. And what I find is that when people come to me and they're prepared for health coaching, they're ready because they've had a fright or revelation. Maybe they've heard something on RCR. Maybe they've listened to the good interviews with Health Hacks, particularly with Glenn Davies. He's been talking a lot about being low carb, which of course is the way to go. For health, there's lots and lots of health benefits, and you've only got to go back to many RCR interviews to find those interviews. So that's really cool. But yes, so somebody's in a situation where they think, I really need to do something, and they don't know where to start. Sometimes it's helpful to talk to someone like me, but if you're like me, maybe you can take stock with your own notebook and write a list of things that you would like to change. Maybe that's something that you can do. Then if you're stuck on the how-tos, that's when a coach comes in. But essentially what we're looking at is our whole life. We're looking at sleep. We're looking at hydration. We're looking at relationships, mental health, food. Food is very, very key. And with food comes supplement or not a supplement. Is my food enough or not? And that the answer is usually no, but the idea is to get everything you can from your food. So, for example, eating things like liver, if you're a meat eater, is really, really helpful to your health. Eating some fresh greens, for some people, there are certain greens you can't eat, but eating fresh greens, say a really healthy homegrown lettuce salad, might be the turning point you need is to grow your own lettuce in your garden. Could be that simple. Might be that you just need to take the dog for a walk every morning for your mental health and for your physical health. Could be, or it could be huge. It could be a complete lifestyle change.
Yeah. So it is often that starting point. One of the things I know, because, you know, we're all ladies of a certain age, and for me, the menopause, it's not been a fright, but it has certainly been a transition.
It is.
And, you know, it's so funny. You're a mum as well. And you know how when we have our children, there used to be the lies that no one actually told you. Like you'd have these babies and it's like, this wasn't an antenatal and I didn't see this in a book. My mother didn't say anything about that.
Yep.
And I've realized now that it's like this Machiavellian game that women play, that we don't tell ourselves these things because no one would ever do it. And menopause is a bit the same. No two menopauses are the same, I've discovered.
That's true.
Talking to my girlfriend, and feeling and seeing your body change on you again,
yeah,
for me has been a bit of a mission. And I know I've had to make changes. Some of them are subtle, some of them are more dramatic, as I've gone through that change.
Mm-hmm.
And it, oh man, it is certainly, you do feel better, but if I can see how women can get really bogged down with menopause and want to sort of instantly go to a medicinal fix.
That's right.
I'm trying to do it without having to go to the patch any. I'm working hard to stay off the patch because.
Well, it's funny, I'm in the same place.
Yeah. So how have you coped with it? What have you done?
Well, okay. So this is the thing. I've done, myself and members of my family have done a lot of research about health and supplementation. And actually one person that's really helpful is actually my son. He spends a lot of time on a computer and he's always looking for solutions for his own life and for ours. So I'll say, can you look up such and such? And off he goes and looks it up and we discover something new together. So I find listening to information, trying stuff out. Honestly, it's been, you know, I've tried some things. For example, when I was younger, I thought that the healthiest thing I could do was to become a vegetarian. And so at 19, when I was already fit and actually starting to do triathlons, I became a vegetarian. And that worked for me for 16 years in that I was young and relatively healthy to start with. But what happened is I started to become obese. Slowly, slowly, once I had children, I had my first child as a vegetarian. And basically what I was doing, when I think about it now, was carb loading. I was eating a lot of carbs, a lot of nut loaves that had a lot of carbs in them. But what I had done is I'd gotten off the standard American junk food diet and I'd gotten into organics. And so every ingredient was organic. But it just happened that I wasn't eating any animal at all. And I know that there are people out there that are vegetarians and they might be going, well, I think vegetarianism is the right thing to do for me. But how do I eat more healthily? Well, it will be harder. And if you're a vegan out there, you know, I wouldn't recommend it personally. If you want coaching, you're going to have to go to a very high level vegan coach. I would not coach somebody who was a vegan because I would feel that I don't have all the tools. So, yeah, it's hard to get your fats and oils, and despite what many people say, it's very hard to get quality protein. And there's quite a few essential nutrients missing from a vegan diet. So for me, I have actually been a vegan. I've been gluten-free. I've been dairy-free. I have been a vegetarian for 16 years, which I look back on, and if I knew what I knew now, I would not have done. I think it actually did some damage to my body. I have been carnivore. I was carnivore a few years ago for 6 months. And again, it's quite radical for a lot of people, but it is actually the ultimate elimination diet because all of the things that can make most people sick or trigger different things in their body are taken away on a carnivore diet. So for some people, that would be the way to go, but I would not do it without some advice and help just because it's so different for people. Yes, I've experimented a lot. I've made a lot of mistakes, and I've also been to various health practitioners with different testing modalities, blood tests, hair tests, all of that stuff, which have all been talked about on RCR. And I wish in a way that I had a guide. I did have several different gurus and mentors, but each of those people were kind of pushing a barrow that might have led to some sales, and some of those things were helpful. You know, I'm taking supplements now that I've heard about on RCR, and that person will be gaining from that, but I feel like they are good supplements, so that's why I'm taking them. Mm-hmm. Now, I like to, if something's working well for me, sometimes I stop doing that thing and see if anything changes when I don't do it. But I'm very, very experimental and have done that since I was 19.
Well, because I guess that makes sense, doesn't it, Annie? Because our bodies are the most complex system, network and computer, an organic form that is on the planet. No two bodies are the same. So you can't apply a one-size-fits-all program to every single person. So I guess that comes back down to the individual, what your goals are, and how is it that I achieve that goal, as you said before, either fast or slow. So,
that's right.
So let's look at some of the key things. So some of those frights that you talked about before. Because let's face it, middle age, that's where we tend to get some of those frights, isn't
Looking in the mirror can be frightening.
Oh, yes. One of the ones I know the Means talked about, and particularly in the United States, with the ultra-high processed foods that they have, type 2 or pre-diabetes is a massive one at the moment. Mm-hmm. The new wunderkind drug seems to be Ozempic. Funnily enough, they reckon you can jab your way back to happiness and thinness with that. Oh, gosh, you would have thought they'd learnt first time round. Anywho, yes, you would. So let's look at pre-diabetes. That is often a harbinger of saying, right, body's saying, look, team.
Yes.
We need to get in check here.
Well, if you have pre-diabetes, which I would hazard a guess that many New Zealanders would have without knowing about, likely, not always, but likely you would have put on some weight. And maybe, like myself, you might have struggled with weight your whole life. So pre-diabetes doesn't just happen. It's taken years to get to that point. And it's years and years of accumulated habits. So if somebody came to me and they were concerned about the fact that they had pre-diabetes or you know, their blood sugars were starting to change, I would straight away look at diet. And what I do for that is I don't necessarily need people to write a whole week of what they eat. If we just go through, one of my skills is asking good questions. And so we would go through and say, right, tell me what is the first thing you put into your body in the morning or whenever you put that in and what time that is. And we just walk right through the day. What's typical? Oh, this is lunchtime for you. Is that a typical lunch or are there two or three different? No, I typically have, you know, a wrap. Okay. And what do you have in the wrap? Great. And then we go all the way through the day and we go right through to bedtime and we look at the timing of the food and we look at what the food is and drink, any drink, whether it's alcohol, whether it's coffee, if it's juice, green smoothies, all that sort of stuff. And I can immediately personally see some hot spots. So one of the things that concern me is that somebody that is trying to be on a health kick, particularly as a woman, latch on to, and I'm sorry, people that believe in this, green smoothies. Green smoothies can be the absolute worst because of the ingredients in them. And well, there's two reasons. One is that you may not be chewing, you're just swallowing. If it's real food, I would prefer people can actually chew it. Secondly, people go, oh, I start my day with a green smoothie. What's in your green smoothie? Well, the orange juice and the spinach and yogurt. Now, orange juice and yogurt are very high carb. And so you're straight away spiking your blood sugar. So if somebody said to me, well, what can I change it with? I say, do you like eggs? Yes, I love eggs. Right, scrambled eggs in the morning. Done. That might be the only change that that person needs to make. They might have a healthy lunch and a healthy dinner, but they've started their day with a green smoothie and a coffee. And that might have just kicked up their blood sugar. Now, of course, I'm not a doctor, and I do recommend that people, if they have a medical condition, that they're under the supervision of that medical person. However, we do have our own minds and you can be under your own supervision. You can take notes, you can do your own pulse, you can do, well, it's a bit harder to do blood pressure, but you can do finger pricks to look at your own blood sugar if that's already become a diagnostic issue. And I believe that type 2 diabetes, for the vast majority of people, whether you are fatty or skinny or somewhere in between, can be turned around adequately so that you would not need to be medicated. I've seen it time and time again. And I think that Glenn from Reversal would say, and many others would say exactly the same thing. Really easy to turn around. So where people fall over is, oh, but I love my dot, dot, dot. So what we do is put enough food into the system that that person is not going to be hungry. And if they have a particular addiction, we look at swapping. Lollies are one. A lot of people eat lollies late at night. Do you know of anybody that does that? I mean, that's a thing. Some people, they say to me, I just have to have my toast. Well, no, you don't, but you think you do. And is it the crunch? Is it the mouthfeel? So we look at what that is for people, and then we look at something that's equally as yummy and satisfying for them. So it could be, for example, we do most things from scratch. We've got, you know, dried everything and homemade salami and stuff like that. So it might be that the person eats a slice of salami instead of some toast. Or they might have, you know, they might have another egg with avocado. But we find out what they do like and we put the do likes in. And if there's not enough taste yum yum for them, we look at helping people to learn how to make things like pestos or aiolis or even short-term hummus is not low carb, but it's a good in-between transition. If someone's snacking on, you know, really horrible junk, like they're eating chippies every day or corn chips, nachos is a big one. People think nachos are healthy. Well, parts of the nachos are. If you're someone that can manage carbs, they're not a problem. But if you can't manage carbs, you need to keep away from them. Mm-hmm. So it's just, you know, learning how to, if you go out to a restaurant and I go out and I often get Eggs Benedict, but I never get the toast. I just say, can I have extra bacon, please? And some people give it to me and other people don't. So that's what I do. So it's just a way of getting rid of those things that are dead weight. Unfortunately, bread, rice, potatoes, pasta, those carbs are the things that people need to get rid of, and they can be very addicted to them because they're sugars. They turn into sugars. Can we just find other things for them to love? It's just a matter of where are the healthy things in my diet and where are the unhealthy things? And some people will get a shock. They'll think that something's healthy. Like if you've got pre-diabetes and you are loving your porridge for breakfast, there's nothing wrong with porridge for breakfast, particularly for a young person or a young growing male. But I would say that if you love your porridge for breakfast with plenty of milk and a lot of honey on top, and I look at the diet and it's the worst thing in the day in terms of carb loading, I would take that out and replace it with, you know, a protein shake, bacon and eggs, you know, something that's high in protein and reasonably high in fat. Yeah. So it's just a matter of trawling through it together, really.
Well, and isn't it interesting what you've just stated? I mean, remember the food pyramid that we used to get taught? One of the things that I discovered is that pyramid was developed by corporate interests. I mean, it was developed by a lobby group.
To get us addicted into grains.
To grains and those foods. So it's like turning that food pyramid on its head. One of the things we're quite hot on in this house is seed oils. Yes. Not fond of the seed oils
No, we don't have seed oils either.
We have been very much a bring back butter house.
Yes. And
you know, extra virgin olive oil and coconut oil are ones that we use here. And it's amazing, because I love to cook. I do a lot of cooking.
Yep.
And for me, when giving up the seed oils, it was how do I have an oil that has got a high smoke point because of the type of cooking that I'm doing. If I'm doing stir frying with vegetables or meats, do a lot of Asian cooking. And that's where, for me, coconut oil was an absolute discovery because it's flavourless, colourless, odourless, and has a high smoke point.
I was like,
where have you been hiding all my life?
Yes, well, I think coconut oil is quite a good, gosh, what's the word when you stop taking a drug and you take something that's not quite so bad? What's the word for that?
A gateway transition.
It's a gateway. I believe that the coconut oil is a gateway. Now, coconut oil is not unhealthy. It is healthy. But there is something better, and that's tallow. I am a great, great fan of tallow. I put it everywhere on my body. I make all my own balms and deodorants and face creams and healing balms and everything. And it used to be all, when I was a vegetarian and doing herbal stuff, it was always coconut oil. Now it is always tallow. And yes, there is room in somebody's diet for coconut oil, particularly if they're not a meat eater and they just can't stand the idea, but the nutritional properties in animal fat are incredible, particularly with fish. If you were going to choose something, if you were thinking, oh, I don't really want to eat meat, but I'll eat some flesh, that would be oily fish. You know, we need those fish, and from the best source you can get them. So again, if you love fish and you think, oh, it's really expensive, ditch some of your bad habits and put the money into fish, or go fishing if you can, or have access to someone. The seed oils, they shouldn't be in the supermarket. They are very, very bad for people, the way that they've been produced and their nutritional value and their ability to create toxins in the body. So, yeah, butter is amazing and coconut oil is pretty good. And olive oil, please, please don't cook it. If you are going to put something in the pan, do not waste your beautiful olive oil. Use it for salads.
Salad dressings.
Salad dressings. Drizzle it on top. Yeah. You know, if you need something wet and oily and you've got food sitting there, use your olive oil.
And the other thing too, mayonnaise, you mentioned before, aioli. Lot of people, yeah, an aioli. A lot of people love those, but they don't, they always will go to the supermarket to buy it and they don't actually realize how straightforward this is to make yourself.
I think we'll do a recipe.
Yeah, with good quality ingredients. Yeah, you tell me yours and I'll tell you mine.
Okay. So I put an egg in my blender. It's a beautiful egg from someone I swapped with meat with. Beautiful egg in the blender, and I shove some, and I literally mean shove, depending on my mood, a mixture of salt, garlic. I might put mustard in, I might not put mustard. So if I'm doing something simple, it'll just be salt and garlic. And then I blend it, and as it's blending, this is the important part. You don't want to be in a warm room, like not a hot room. You get your beautiful olive oil and you start to drizzle it on the top. And what will happen as you blend it is it will slowly thicken up. Now, if you put, you know, say half a cup in and you've blended it and it hasn't thickened up, you might need to cool your olive oil a bit and take your blender into a cooler room and just start again, take it all out and start again, because sometimes it doesn't thicken. It's called emulsification. But I might add, I don't normally add a lot because it's going on a salad anyway. I might add pepper. I might add turmeric. I might put extra garlic in, but I don't always put mustard in. It just depends on my mood, but it should taste. Oh, sorry. And then the last thing I put in is a squeeze of lemon juice, just a squeeze. So it should taste reasonably salty and quite lemony. And I like the garlic to be almost overpowering because our family love garlic. So it depends. Yep. And then you've got aioli. It'll be about a cup's worth. And, you know, I don't measure things. I just sort of add. And for each egg, I would probably triple the amount of oil that goes in. And then I store it in the fridge and we use it very generously on top of salads, roast vegetables, and even sometimes on meats. Yum, yum. It's just the glue that makes everything yummy.
Yeah, our one is fairly similar, so it's egg as well. Egg, I tend to use apple cider vinegar instead of lemon. Yep, so apple cider vinegar. So it's usually one egg, about two tablespoons of apple cider vinegar, about a teaspoon of salt, pepper if you want, but I tend not to do pepper. And then that's just it. And then I will whack the blender on and just sort of mix that up first and then do the same. Pop the blender on and then just slowly add. Now look, if you're all sitting there thinking, Marie, we don't have a freaking blender or we've got a ninja that doesn't add stuff in the top or what have you. You can actually do this with a bowl and a whisk.
A whisk.
Mm. You'll get very, very good bicep muscles doing this.
Or you could fork it and use your arm even more.
Yeah, yeah.
If you're stuck in your batch without a whisk.
And you literally just very, very slowly add the oil. And from memory, the oil, it's about a cup and a half thereabouts.
It's a lot more than the egg.
Yeah. Mm. It's about a cup and a half of the oil. And you just ever so slowly whiz that in and it just gets creamier and creamier and creamier and creamier.
And I stop and mine stop. And taste it. And then I go, oh, it's still quite salty. I'll add some more oil. So if in doubt, add less and add more in. And you don't use garlic. You can use garlic. You don't have to use garlic. You can put whatever you like in it, but I would say keep it simple. It's got a taste of its own, and then you can put it over your food. The other thing I find helps a lot of people to get sort of a yummy stuff. They go, what about this? What about that? Because people miss, I think, the creamy, tasty mouthfeel of deep fried stuff or pasta with a sort of oily sauce. They miss that. So I use a lot of pesto. Just because you can make pesto out of any green in your garden. I use parsley a lot. Parsley is very, very good for you. If I don't have basil, I grow basil every year, but sometimes I just grab weeds out of the garden that are edible weeds and blend them into a pesto because I have a family member that can't eat greens because they have a high level of disability. And what I find is pesto is a great base, again, for a quick eggy meal. Or quite often, we do a lot of leftovers, so I'll grab pesto, shove it in the pan, chop up some of yesterday's roast, put a little bit of gravy in. I mean, this sounds disgusting, but it's actually delicious. A chopped up onion, and then we might look at it and go, that looks a bit sloppy, let's shove some eggs in, shove a couple of eggs in, and we've got a soft, forkable, quick, high-protein meal. That's, you know, my husband goes, quick, it's lunchtime, and I go, oh no, I haven't cooked. Oh, we've got some leftover meat, that's what I do. Mm. So you can make a sort of a goo. I have met people that don't eat leftovers. Well, they need to get over themselves because they're food in your fridge. But you can put your favourite things in. You can put celery in. You can put grated carrot in if you want to. You know, if you want a higher vegetable content than that. Whereas because we've walked the carnivore journey, I'm not trying to excuse my pun, beef up all of my meals with a ton of different vegetables. There's key vegetables we use, but not the range I used to.
It's interesting you talk about the pesto, because you look at, when you look at traditional diets, and they talk about the traditional Mediterranean diet, and there's two diets that stand out. One is traditional Mediterranean, the other one is Japanese, mm-hmm. that both have got very good longevity properties. One of the things that they use a lot, depending on where you are, is some form of fresh green-based sauce. So mm-hmm. you've got pesto with the Italians, salsa verde with the French, you've got chimichurri with the South Americans, you know, and all it literally is, nine times out of ten, is an olive oil, some form of green herb, and generally lemon. Sometimes with or without nuts, with or without cheese, with or without anchovies. Mm. But it's some sort of very simple green or zesty condiment that is made by simple ingredients.
And it's wet and it's oily, and it sort of helps any dry ingredients to have that yum factor. I'll tell you, we had an Italian woofer some years ago, and I'd made pesto, and she was right into her Italian food. And she said, "That is better pesto than my mother makes." I said, "You're joking." She goes, "It is." And I said, "Well, it's probably cheaper too, because I don't use pine nuts because they're hugely expensive." But I can just run through what I put in my pesto. I
mean, go on then. Go on. What are you
doing? So you
go
outside and you walk around barefoot in your garden. That's really important. And you smell the roses. If you do not have your own herbs or vegetables in your garden, consider getting a very small amount. The things that I really value, because they're easy, are parsley and basil in my pesto. But I can put any green edible leaf in. I wouldn't eat spinach, but that's another story. And then I come home and I wash them and sort of shake them so that there's not too much water, and dice them up. I've got a blender. You could use a stick blender. It would be a bit messier. But I've got a standard blender. I put it in. And then I chuck in literally about half a cup of, what do we call them, sunflower seeds instead of pine nuts.
Sunflower
seeds. I do not use parmesan because a lot of people are dairy-free and it's expensive, so I'm trying to keep it cheap and yummy. I put in the best quality olive oil I can afford, so I get decanted stuff locally if I can, try and support local olive oil. And I put in a ton of salt, and I put in a heap of garlic. And I blend it, and I let it blend, and I scrape the sides down, and I might taste it again. I might have noticed I put too much salt in, so I put some more parsley or whatever in. But I just do it to taste. It is hard to get the nuts to actually, they don't completely grind up. They sort of cut up. But when you eat them and put them in your mouth, when you put a teaspoon of pesto in your mouth, it's very tasty, highly garlicky and slightly salty. And, I mean, you could chuck in other vegetables, but I keep it green. Because, you know, we can add it to all sorts of things. But you could put other things in as well. Simple.
My grandmother was Māori, and she was, if she'd go places, and I remember she came and visited here once. It was not long after we moved in. And anyway, we had puha, wild puha that just happened self-seeded. And I'd sort of seen it, and I hadn't, you know, hadn't clocked it really, when she walked in and she saw this puha sitting there, and she, next minute, she's out and she's got a little paper bag and she's picking the puha. Yeah. And I'm like, you know, what are you up to, La? Oh, you haven't picked your puha. And it's like, oh, I didn't even realize it was there. And I completely forgot about that, because that's a bitter green puha. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's one that often people associate with a boil up, but yeah. Puha, actually eaten as a fresh green vegetable in a pesto, would actually be quite good. Yeah, and bitter greens are very good for your liver, I understand.
Now, the only thing I would say with caution, and again, I do not know, and I will find out about puha, is whether it's high in oxalates, because that's my beef against spinach. Is spinach is very, very high in oxalates. And I am somebody, again, this is my own experience, who's had very sore joints, and I've spent... The vegetarianism didn't help, to be honest, but because I had a lot of spinach. But I went, when I did my carnivore phase, which was 6 months, I did a deep dive into oxalates, which cause crystals in your joints. And some people are far more susceptible. And the highest oxalates in spinach. Now, there are oxalates in other things, and this is not going to be a lesson on oxalates, but I wonder about poo-ha, and that would be something that would be worth finding out.
Do oxalates also exacerbate gout?
Yes, absolutely.
Right.
Yes.
Okay.
So as women, and okay, there's men out there too, hello men, as women of a certain age, once we hit menopause, my experience is all my chickens came home to roost. There was all these things I found out about myself. For example, I have got Hashimoto's thyroiditis, which is another thing that has pushed me into being much more strict with my very low-carb diet. Now, I am not keto. I'm very close, and that's where I'm trying to get. But I have done a lot of intermittent fasting, and I did all these things as I got to this age because, A, I had reached menopause. I was putting on more weight. I was feeling more tired, and I had a thyroid problem, but I got sore joints. So everything came because, you know, as you change, it all comes out in the wash, doesn't it? And so one of the things I discovered was oxalates are not making my joints happy. And oxalates are found in quite a few different things. Look it up. It's worth going down that rabbit hole again.
So what are some of the key offenders on the oxalate path? I'm thinking tomatoes could be there, nightshades.
Nightshades, and spinach. Spinach is the absolute worst and plays havoc with a lot of people because of the green smoothie brigade. That's a key thing that people put into their smoothies. Not everybody does, but people feel more virtuous the greener their smoothie is, I think. Sorry if I've offended you. It's really the worst thing to put in your body. Yeah, yeah. There's not many smoothies I would approve of. They'd have to be whey based, and they would have to have vegetables that weren't high in sugar, which most vegetables are.
I remember many years ago because, I mean, you've met me in person, and I'm A, very tall. And actually, if anyone's ever been to an RCR thing, a lot of the women in RCR were all very tall.
Jaspreet's really tall. Yeah, I remember when I first met Jaspreet, I could not believe how tall she was.
Yeah. I mean, I'm actually one of the shorter ones. I'm 5'10". I'm one of the shorter ones. A lot of the women are sort of between 5'10 and 6 foot.
So,
Claire is our exception.
I always thought Alia was short.
No, Alia's taller than me.
Until I met them. Very funny.
You see
them on a video and their face is sitting down.
You wait until you meet Katie Ashley Coppins.
Yes, I have.
She's at least 6 foot. So a lot of us are very, very, very tall.
Yeah.
But I'm definitely of the hefty Polynesian persuasion. So I've always sort of been a bit bigger. But it's interesting. You mentioned firstly fasting. Like for me, when my menopause started, I actually discovered that I was better off to actually fast in the morning, just some water and a simple coffee without milk, you know, just for a phase, and then have something lighter at lunchtime and then my healthier dinner. And that actually for me was a huge change. I slept better. Mm-hmm. I had the aching and the paining disappeared. I was like, wow, okay, that's a simple change I can deal with. So that for me worked very well.
Oh, that's cool.
But it's that finding what works for you, isn't it? That figuring out what does work for you and what has you feeling better. And for me, it is, and I guess, you know, women of a certain age, for me, it is sleep.
Yeah.
Sleep is one that I find if I'm not sleeping properly, that I need to look at what's going on, and we can look at the stress, but often I need to be looking at the diet as well. So what are some of the key factors with sleep that you come across?
Okay, so sleep is, I seem to be the worst, well, the best maybe, advocate for things, because sleep is something that I have always battled with my whole life, right? Mm. And it's gotten worse. I have a relative that I look after that is basically in the last stages of their life, and that's been going on for quite some time, so that's been really stressful. There's several things. One is shortening your eating window from a diet perspective. And I have to admit that, again, I haven't quite gotten there, but ideally, once you've, like, don't take this on. If you are somebody who is addicted to food and you're feeling out of control with food, don't do this first. Get rid of the junk first. You know, there's ways and means. But this would be the next step once you've got your food cleaned up, is to shorten your window to maybe an 8-hour eating window. And for me personally, I need to make sure, and so does everybody, is that you don't eat within 2 to 3 hours of going to bed. So if I go to bed at 10 o'clock, I should probably finish eating by 6 o'clock or even 6:30. But it depends on when I start eating. And as people get down the track, there are some people that need to eat breakfast, particularly while they're changing to a healthy diet. But then often the first meal that people remove is they might not eat their first meal until lunchtime. But so they've shortened that window. It depends on how you do it. Sometimes it's evening, sometimes it's morning, sometimes it's both. But if you became, say, a carnivore or very low carb, you might find that you're ending up with eating two meals a day, or even some carnivores and some people eat one meal a day. And that's in line with our natural bodies in nature. We don't actually snack all day. That is not something that humans are naturally going to do. And in the past, you know, going back to our ancestral diet, we might have eaten an animal and binged on it for 2 or 3 days, and then we might not eat for 3 or 4 days. So I'm not suggesting people do that, but to shorten that window. The other thing about sleep is sleep hygiene. And the biggest offender for me and for everybody I've ever met is devices, getting off those devices. And, you know, I have sat in the evening knitting many evenings. I want to get my knitting in before bed, and I get really angry if I don't get 30 minutes of knitting. It pisses me off, excuse my language. But I used to watch a political thing. I used to listen to RCR or watch a Tucker Carlson or something else I was trying to catch up on in the COVID days. Or, you know, back in those frantic days, I was actually, you know, working and doing stuff. So what I've done now is I turn off music and I turn off the internet and I turn off the interesting documentary or whatever it is at 8:30. Very, very hard one for me. But I find that calms me down, and I try and do, I've got several lots of knitting. I do the knitting that is least stressful. So it could be reading a book. I used to do that in bed before I slept, but I have a husband that doesn't like the light on. So some people read a book. Some people meditate before bed, and some people might do a little bit of yoga, but you need to get off the devices, off, out of work mode. You know, you might have, if you've got TVs blasting in your house, well, you might have a new sort of rule that if people are going to be watching that sort of stuff, they have to do it quietly. Get rid of all that noise and turn the lights down. Even on your devices, I've got mine from 5 o'clock going orange. So even at 5 o'clock, my devices are going orange and telling me it's getting, we're quietening down. Mm-hmm. So then the habit attached to that would be to get up early in the morning and do that stuff in the morning, you know, get busy in the morning. And then once you've hit mid-afternoon, start to slow down.
Yeah.
Don't have a coffee in the afternoon. I've done that too. I've often done a 4 o'clock coffee and I've stopped doing that for that sort of thing. And also, some of us don't do well on caffeine. I love having a rooibos chai in the afternoon if I want to drink a hot drink with cream in it, because cream is good for you. So yeah, that would be the sleep thing. The other thing is make sure that you don't have a hot room, that you've got a cool room for sleeping at night, and that you can shut all your curtains and you don't have your devices or flashing alarm clocks. Everything goes quiet. And you could even go to the extent of getting the blue light glasses for use on your computer in the later half of the day. Now, I had a lovely NZDSOS doctor help me with some of the sleep hygiene stuff. And, you know, I knew it all, but I wasn't doing it.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. Drink plenty of water too. And stimulants, any stimulant. I hadn't thought about that. If you're a Coca-Cola drinker or something, get rid of it out of your life. If you are an energy drinker, drink them only in the morning.
Mm.
Ideally, you'd get those out of your life as well. That's where you claim your money back. You can buy good food when you stop drinking and eating the junk.
Well, they're expensive, isn't it? And it's just setting sort of good habits and boundaries. So everyone's listened to all of this now this morning and they're like, oh gosh, you know, I think a lot of it is deep down we know. So give me three simple things that if people are sitting at home listening to this that you could do, which easy, quick, inexpensive, that will give you some really nice results to get you started on this journey.
Eat more meat and eggs. So maybe swap out some of the other stuff. When you go to the supermarket, have a look at your shopping cart and look at the rice, the pasta, the bread and all of those things, and start to get less of those in your shopping cart and put more meat, eggs and vegetables in your shopping cart. more things that were previously walking, swimming, running, or what was it, growing out of your garden. The third thing, and to really, this is probably not quick, but if you don't have a garden, start to grow some simple, maybe some lettuce, maybe some parsley, something really simple. You can contain a garden. I've seen people grow their whole household needs in container gardens. You can just use a shitty old bucket. It does not have to be expensive. And if you don't know how to do it, get some of your RCR, VFF friends to help you out. I think growing food helps you appreciate it. Even if it's just, wow, I've got fresh lettuce, I've got some fresh parsley, whatever it is. I often, you know, pull a carrot straight out of the garden and I'm sorry, I don't wash it. I just eat it because I want to eat the dirt as well. I mean, I'm not, that's not my advice to you. That's just, I get enthusiastic about pulling things out of a garden and eating them. Really exciting. But yeah, I think start looking at your shopping trolley, and you could even take, if you think you're making changes, take a photo of your shopping trolley. That might be something that you can do, because I don't want anybody to feel shame. If you feel that it's overwhelming, then get help. I offer help. Other people offer help. But coaching, it's like going to a counsellor. It's sometimes worth laying it out to someone and going, I don't know where to start, because I can always find a starting point for people. If somebody has, like if they write down everything that they eat in a day, we might change one thing. It might be a breakfast, might be taking out two coffees, it might be getting rid of soft drink, just one thing at a time. I think for some people it's overwhelming to make change without some guidance, and for others, people do their own study and just race ahead. So whatever you need is okay.
Mm. And also to getting support on the journey as well. I love your idea about the VFF garden groups. I know they exist. My mother-in-law is in one. Yes. She loves it. She Lovely. Absolutely loves it. It's one of the highlights of her week is going to a gardening group. And that's just it. It's getting that camaraderie. And if you've actually got like-minded people and you do it on a journey, you might have somebody you're friends with a garden. Someone else might have access to eggs, or someone else, as you said before, might be a fisher person or a fisherman and might, yep. you know, you get the whole, I love a barter. Bartering
Swapsies are great.
Swapsies is the best thing
ever. We need to really develop our swapsies muscle and our spending cash with each other muscle, and not just automatically go to the supermarket.
Mm. Yeah. Well, it's how our parents and grandparents did it.
They did.
Absolutely. My grand, both, oh gosh, gardening is, my father has now, so funny, my parents have just moved into retirement community. I think you and I have talked about this on some of our previous episodes. And anyway, I finally got them there, Annie, they're there. So they're in the community, and my dad had, I mean, he used to have a garden that was massive. And like, aww. I'm talking, he had a vegetable garden, the house garden, plus a half an acre out the back where yeah. he grew potato and kumara and all sorts of things. So he's now gone into this unit. He's got his little garden out the back where he grows like Aww. Greens and lettuce and broccoli and stuff for him and mum. And he's now in the composting club.
Ooh.
Ooh, he's in the composting club, loving it. So it doesn't matter what scale it's on. And he's now got all his little buddies. Some of his buddies are still fishing. They're doing sort of swaps wow. there. You know, there's ways.
It's probably teaching people, actually, do you think?
Yeah. I think so. He's really thoroughly enjoying it. So it's getting back to some of those skills that our parents and grandparents used to do and bring them back.
I think we have to take responsibility for our health. That's what it comes back down to. Is you are not taking responsibility for your health. If you have a condition or a diagnosis that you're, you know, not coping with, and you're feeling that the answers lie outside yourself, the answers lie within. And first of all, it's making a decision that you are worth it. You are worth it to nurture. I meet people all the time that don't want to spend money on their health, but they have a flash new car or e-bike, or that is on their health, I suppose. But, you know, they might spend a lot of money on knitting wool. Sorry, Marie, but I'm also addicted to that. They might spend a lot of money on wool, but they balk at the idea of buying salmon for themselves. Mm. And I'm not saying we should all eat salmon each day, but you know what I mean. Let's swap some of the bad stuff out and put some good stuff in. Yeah. Let's look at, and with the whole thing with budgeting, I've met people that say they can't afford good food. So we've done a whole budget. And I know that's going a long way down a different track, but it actually helped them to see that, you know, I went to the supermarket yesterday for the first time in a month. That's how often I go to the supermarket. I hate going there. I do not enjoy it. because of the lights and the hustle and the bustle and the fact that I've been banned from that particular one over the COVID era for sticking stickers on shelves telling people to go to the VFF. I think it's just, you know, like I see people reach for the Olivani, right?
Yeah.
Reach for the butter. I see people reach for a package something, put the package back, and actually something that's worked for my daughter is she's been living with me. She should know how to cook, but no, she'd been a carb-addicted teen. She got Nadia Lim's My Food Bag. Now, I keep thinking, oh, that's really expensive, but actually she and her boyfriend have learned some recipes, not from me, from that. They've learned how to put stuff together to make it yummy. And the next step for them is to get off that and do it themselves. Yeah. So that's taught them heaps, to be fair.
Yeah. Oh, there's always a way. There's always a way.
But we have to take responsibility because our government is not going to look after us. We don't want to get to the stage where our government looks after all of our needs because that's beyond socialism, communism. Our doctors sadly don't have the capacity to look after us unless we have someone like Reversal NZ, but even then we need to take our own responsibility. Mm. This is our life, it's our body, it's our experience. We may only have one life. It's short, it's very short. The older I get, the shorter it's getting. And we have to take responsibility and decide where we're spending our money. And I think our health is more important than the newfangled pair of shoes or sunglasses.
Look, couldn't agree more. Now, look, if you need to listen to any of the content that Annie and I have done before, we've covered dating, we've covered debt, we've covered death. That got a tremendous amount of response. You need to go to the replays page, just pop in Annie Hart in the search. All of those previous interviews will come up. They're fantastic. And if you want to reach out to Annie, inbox@realitycheck.radio is our email, or 2057 is the text. We can help hook you up. As always, I love chatting to you. We could chat for forever, you and I.
We could talk about knitting. But wait, you do that all the time, Marie.
I know. I do that all the time. So look, thank you very much, Annie. It's always been so much fun to catch up.
Yeah,
and as awesome. I said, 2057 for the text or inbox@realitycheck.radio if you want to reach out. Take care. More great content here to come with Counterculture. Don't disappear.
Have a great day.
From caps to tees and bags to bumper stickers, we have you covered. Visit www.realitycheck.radio/shop.